and having compassion for people. We can have compassion for people that have been sick or ill, because we've been sick or ill. It's through the same experience, the same understanding of knowing for yourself, the experiential experience of it, that you really can have compassion for someone else. I had led a workshop a few months ago. It was on compassion or gratitude, or they all kind of. And the conclusion was, after a few hours of writing and discussion and meditation, that it was easier to have compassion for people out there, like the poor, the people that are starving in so many places, pick a place, or the children being sold into slavery in Cambodia, Africa, wherever, the politics. And the point is that people that are far away, it was easier for this group to have compassion for the people, the person on the street being homeless, or the person standing in line Tuesday morning to get food at the local church. And then it came in, of course, their grandmother and their grandfather having compassion, and then there's people that they worked with. It got a little iffy, they had been hurt by these people before in some way, or had some kind of fear around it. So the compassion got a little more conditional. The family, it was interesting that for some of them, compassion and the real open-hearted, clear-hearted, strong, full-hearted compassion was a bit limited to the people closest in their circle. Oh, well, I have conditions, They didn't, they lost their job, and he promised he would help me make this mortgage payment. Or, I have a few expectations of this person that lives with me, more so than a person that doesn't live with them in their personal space. It's very interesting. Yet really what it is, this practice of compassion is really about, I feel, about seeing things as they are, accepting things as they are. And where does this begin? Right here. Right here. Seeing where I really can see where I fall short or mess up, or to do something unskillfully, gives me compassion for someone else that maybe I perceive did that or not. But truly, the compassion starts here. In our practice, we don't talk a whole lot about it, but compassion is the basis of our Mahayana, of our Soto Zen practice. What we chanted today, the Heart Sutra, Prajna, and this is usually what we can read about or we talk about. It's the wisdom side, the prajna side. Zen is very good at this. We have tremendous amount of literatures trying to describe what it is or it isn't. And you've heard me say, as others say, for a tradition that really doesn't trust words or can't be described, we got a heck of a lot of books out there written about it. But there aren't a lot of books out there written about, or that we talk about, is, in my experience, or we talk about is the compassion. Because the compassion is inherent in our practice. In our Mahayana tradition and what we practice in, we have the Bodhisattva ideal. We take the Bodhisattva vows. Most of us do. The serious practitioners, we take our vows. Beings are numberless. We vow to save them. We can't do this without compassion. Delusions. You can't do this without compassion. You cannot enter those Dharma gates or attain or become the Buddha way without compassion. It's very, very much the basis of our practice. And why is that so? It shows up on our cushion, huh? Shows up in the practice. What inspired this talk for me today was a new book by Norman Fisher. He has taken a very old, very, very old tradition from the Tibetans and has written a book on it. Now, of course, there's thousands of books already written on it and commentaries written on it. I think it's the first one, though, the commentary, though, is that's written by a Zen teacher. The book is Training in Compassion, Zen Teaching on the Practice of Lojong. Lojong is mind or brain, like training or teaching, training the mind. And they attribute this mind training to a guru back in the first century, in the Common Era, that they can tell by history, and then it wasn't documented or written down until this golden era of where, like Dogen and other great writers, in about, what was it, 1200, 1200s, something. Anyway, Dogen is based on 7 points of practice and 59 slogans. These slogans let me back up a little bit here. I'm not even past the introduction and the first slogan. Been on it. I've been like koans, working with it, being with it. It's not really about learning about it in your mind. As we all know, this practice is embodying the practice, embodying being human. It's a practice. So right up front, Norman, how many people have had the opportunity to meet him? He seems very personable, do you think? Very down-to-earth, very personable. He's also written a book, what encouraged him to write, why a Zen teacher would write something about Tibetan, is that he had very good response on his books that he wrote, one book on the Psalms, and his background is, of course, he practices in the Zen tradition as born into the Judea tradition. Very well received, along with another book on the Odyssey. And it's a whole other perspective on this. Plus, he said the first reason was that you don't see many books written on compassion in Zen. And really, another reason, and I don't know, well, Another reason, which I am very familiar with, is, and we all are as part of our practice, I think, too, is that our minds are trainable. We may be born with a set of characteristics, and we can say, oh, well, you know, that's so-and-so, and, oh, I'm always going to be like this Aquarian, you know, INFJ kind of person. You know? Sure, you know. We have these personality types. I mean, we are a personality type, sort of born with the certain stars and whatnot, right? And we have this mind. The preciousness of being human, number one, is something to remember as we practice this. But this mind, as the Tibetans have always known, way ahead of everyone, is that it's trainable. Rick Hansen, he has just published, I think it was last year, the year before, just published the book on Buddha's brain. Anybody familiar with that? And he talks about mind training, I think, a little bit in there, but more about how the mind works, I think. Mm-hmm. And so I saw him at a chaplaincy conference many years ago, or a few years ago. He has a really good online e-sign also called wisebrain.org. Really interesting stuff. And he practices in the insight meditation. But what he was saying, insight tradition, but what he was saying, and that I remember, and I'm going to, you know, big generalization and metaphor, but basically how our mind, one of the ways that our mind works is that something will happen to us, an experience, and then our thoughts, right, or our thoughts and experience. And our brain has these little, he described them as, and this is why I can remember this metaphor, is like if you're in a mountain, you know, you have some water, it's always going to flow down, right? The more water that flows downhill, the deeper the groove. So he explained like our brain is like that. So if we have the same experience all the time and think about it, oh, fire burns you. You know, you're going to hurt yourself. The groove gets really deep every time you see fire. So we're pretty well wired in there, you know. You see something else. Oh, I got bit by a dog. Okay. Dink, you know, here's this little creek being made in your head. And it will always run down that same way if you always think that you need to stay away and be afraid of dogs. But we can retrain the brain. We kind of know this from our practice, I believe. The precepts give us good guidelines. We can look at a dog, maybe, and instead of saying, maybe it's not such a good thing, but maybe this dog won't bite me. Let me see what's going on. Is it leashed? Is it got a good owner? Do I know it? Do I know it by name? You have some different thinking going on. And it reroutes this little creek. So it just doesn't go down, stay away, be fearful. So you got a new little creek happening there. And the more water, the more way that we think that goes that way, you can actually will be stronger. The other little brain creek is overridden by a new way of thinking. You can tell me later how badly I may have butchered that, but this is kind of the concept I like to think about, how our mind works. I've used it for many, 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 many years in reframing, having intentions. This is what practice is about. Practice to become the person you want to be, whether it be a better athlete, a better singer. You practice. You want to be a better runner. You want to be a better cook. You want to... How do you do these things? You practice. How do you become more compassionate? You practice. And with that said, in the foundation of our tradition being this, Shogyam Trungpa is the one that really brought the mind training to the United States and to the Western students. And I take great joy in knowing that he was good friends with Cobenchino. They were really good friends from my understanding. And he was the one that first brought the translation from the Tibetan to us. And he's written a commentary and talks about the slogans. And then, of course, his probably one of his most famous or lovable students, Pema Chodron, has written a book about this. And this is the book that I studied over 10 years ago quite a bit. So I'm thrilled that Norman came out with this. But what I like in reading the introduction about this in the last few days, what he said about this and this training is that it's, he calls it like grandma's teachings. Like your grandmother will teach you, you know, this is the way that you pick green beans, or this is the way that you make a pie crust. You know, very basic things that are passed along very intimately, something that just gets passed on from down your lineage, down your family, generation to generation. These grandma teachings of training the mind. The first slogan is, train in the preliminaries. The first slogan of 59, train in the preliminaries. I've been on this thing for a couple weeks, and this is not the first time I've been studying this. Train in the preliminaries. So this is about, you know, paying attention to what grandma told you. What is that? What are these teachings? One, there's suffering. We have suffering in the world, our first noble truth. There's karma, another very basic teaching. We are caught up in that cause and effect. There is cause and effect, there's karma. Another very basic teaching is that things die. Nothing stays the same. I still got a lot of beefs with this one. But impermanence, nothing stays the same. Always changes. But very, very basic teaching. And the fourth, which I know we forget, I forget. This human life is very precious. It's very precious. The way Norm described it in his first chapters is very simple. I mean, if you look around, all the bugs, just the bugs themselves. I had a girlfriend tell me that if all the spiders' weight in the world is more than the weight of all the mammals, that's a really scary thing. But there's a lot of spiders, a lot of bugs. There's a lot of animals. There's a lot of mice. There's a lot of rats. There's a lot of roaches. There's a lot of fish. We think there's a lot of human beings, but we're nothing. Being born human is very precious. And being born a human that is able to have access to the Dharma is even more precious. This story, and if anybody can help me where it comes from, but another one of these images or metaphors that I like, that I heard several years ago, and is a sea turtle. And he's swimming way, way, way deep in the ocean. And I've been told that it's as rare to be human as it is for the sea turtle to come up. And as he comes up and breaks the ocean waves, he puts his neck through a hoop like this. That's how rare and special it is to be human. This is training in the preliminaries, one aspect of training in the preliminaries. But as Zen practitioners, training in the preliminaries is practice. And what is our basic practice? It's here, sitting on the cushion, right here. Zazen. I didn't think I had anything to say about it, but I can go on and on and on and on, and it's 20 after plus, and I kind of like to think and hear what you all think about this. Has anybody studied this before, the Lojong? Anybody heard of it or studied it with it before?
I've been listening to Pema Chodron tapes, mm-hmm. CDs, and she talks about the slogans and goes through some of them. I wanted to ask about one of them.
Which
is they have five of them she calls the training in the absolute,
yes,
rather than in the relative, mm-hmm. which the other ones are. One of them is, for example, regard all dharmas as dreams,
rest
in the nature of unborn awareness, etc. Mm-hmm. But the first four of those five are fairly simple. The last one is not relative to meditation at all. And as you said, after meditation, remain a child of illusion.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Forget it.
I haven't practiced with that one in a long time. Yet, my gut feeling, my first hit on that, and feel free to respond to him if you want, is that to remain open. Hmm. Norman actually, he says the first one is, you know, it's your basic training in the preliminaries, but the ones that, like Cliff just said, they're divided up at 7 points. And the first part is absolute, let me see here, now, let me get to the 7 points, which is kind of the way, not kind of, it's the way also that he divided up the book, is... the absolute compassion, which are a few of the next slogans, and then relative compassion. And Norman said, you know, why did they put all this emptiness and absolute and relative right up front? You know, why didn't he just stick with the simple ones and build up to it? Which is really interesting. Because as they go on, I mean, it reads like something your grandma, you know, says. It's all about don't expect applause. Don't be frivolous. Don't wallow. Don't be jealous. Don't vacillate. Don't be swayed by circumstances. Don't misinterpret. These are all things that we've practiced with the precepts. They seem pretty straightforward. That's at least what I thought about the precepts, too, until I started studying them. He says, Norman goes on to say that after we truly, really understand about the absolute relative, we really, you know, he was talking about, again, I think prajna, how we chant the Heart Sutra. Then we move on into more of the, I guess, logistical things of being human. I don't know. But that was one take of looking down on that.
Mm-hmm. It seems kind of odd to be speaking about the relationship between compassion and training the mind. Because in my consideration of compassion, it really seems to be a matter of the heart and very, very little about the mind. And so if you just asked, how do we train the heart? That is a huge, hugely different kind of question. I mean, we can do with the little rivers in the brain and all of that. It's all sort of quantifiable and measurable, and we've got metaphors for it, and lots of books written on mind training, for sure. But how do we... compassion seems to me to happen here. And in some sense, I think it's... there's a reason why there's not a lot of material on it, because it's hard, it's almost impossible to teach how to feel.
How to feel.
Correct. How to feel.
Yeah. So, I've heard the rumor that our mind's connected to the heart. I've also been told that in many languages, there is no word difference between your heart in your mind. Shin, I believe, is what it is. It's one word.
It's heart mind. It's often referred to. It's
correct. And Norman and I, and apparently the Tibetans of long ago, believe that we can train in compassion. And as you pointed out, it's not a head thing. You have to embody it. How do we train the mind? We're fearful of that homeless, the homeless person. Identify this. How can we show compassion? How can we practice compassion? All of these slogans are based on turning things around. All of these slogans are based on looking at what we're fearful of, looking at what we don't want to face, to open our heart. You can't do this with the head. You can say, oh, I'm not going to be scared, you know, but you can't, as you pointed out. We got this thing, compassion. We have these feelings. I believe, as does the research believe, General Theory of Love is another great book that's fairly old, but ties in with the research of the brain. We can teach ourselves to have compassion and love and other ways, and it comes with practice. So training the mind is not something, it's not like you study it. It's very much like koans in a way. And I can't really talk with koans that much because I always try to muscle through them this way. But, and how he talks that we study with them is that we read perhaps a bit about this, train in the preliminaries. We sit with it, maybe we journal with it, we sit with it, not really focusing on it, but calling it to our awareness. So when we face something, just like in our practice, something happens that we can see it in the moment right now for what it is. And we can respond more in compassion, more in the moment. So it sounds very odd. Oh, we're training the mind. And that would be my first thought. Was my first thought. But working with these, I can see how it turns. Every one of these turns something into... it doesn't tell you to be nice. Oh, be nice. It doesn't tell you to be compassionate. They're telling you, look at your jealousy. Look at these things. Everything that turns it around and points it in. To look at anything that we come smack up against, that we're fearful, we're angry, we don't like, you know, we don't want to deal with, all of this. Fair game. So I hope does that a little bit kind of make sense? Or, not that I need to talk you into it, but no. I see how it works for me.
Well, I have a lot of compassion for you and having to talk me into anything. but I can see this connection. From my point of view, compassion arises out of suffering. That You spoke at the beginning about experience.
Yes.
That out of our own suffering, our heart breaks open, our heart opens. And one of the deepest trainings that we might have to undergo is a training in how to suffer.
Yes.
Not so much how to, and no. You were saying that.
You're right. You're spot on. I think you've just said it. Mm-hmm. I think you're on it. Because it's only through feeling that. I'm not, especially when I was younger, I'm not too dumb, But to embody, which is to feel, and you're spot on. The mind training is a way in to help us look at our own suffering, just as what we're doing on the cushion and in our practice. Thank you. Good to see you, Todd.
And the same note with Mega is, then wouldn't that say that having compassion for yourself might be at the beginning?
Yeah, that's what this is. In Metta and Maitreya, the compassion does start with ourselves. You're absolutely right.
And a little bit more, maybe, that it seems inherent. I've said to myself recently, I said, I think inherently everybody's good. So all the things that are, as you stated, fear, mainly, it seems like, for me right now, getting caught at muddy the water. But inherently, everybody is good or has this. So it's not a... It's just a whole being.
That's right. That's
so,
right.
So that makes me think of... love what you said about all the words that are said about the non-word thing. Because I just can't... I want to be able to use a kind of scientific way. What is prajna? So I can get it into thinking. Oh, yeah.
I got it.
But that's not... that's a problem I have with words in general, is that it falls short, because that definition of business works for a little while, and then it just kind of dissipates, because it just is a whole kind of experience to me. Sitting here in time and space without words that seemed endlessly chattering in my brain anyway, eventually they kind of settle or something. Now that's experience over this facsimile of representing it in this these utterances. And that sense of compassion with other people and myself, especially, seems to come from more that the experience of it than some form of representation of it. In fact, I don't know if I can fully understand it without that.
Correct. I'm right there with you. You said it well. And Todd, you probably, your experience of why people are all good. I don't know if anybody told you that. I mean, but you came to it by probably some experience or sitting. I never thought I could trust the world myself. And this is why I believe so strongly about mind training. I was born very fearful. I'm a recovering alcoholic and drug addict, so I was in a lot of denial and fear. I believe in mind training. I believe that we could take our mind, that either culture, my parents, I'm not blaming anybody, but our mind, how it got to the place where I had to be fearful of the world to check out, to wake up. And that's why I it sounds stupid. Maybe it's heart training. Hell, I don't know.
Whatever works. It's a semantical kind of thing.
Exactly. Back to that. Back to that. It's an experiential kind of thing.
Yeah. The guy, the famous senator Hayakawa, he says from Taste, I got this from, he says words, language, is basically like a topographical map at its best. And that you should always add etc. And then ask yourself, who or why are you talking to this person?
Good.
The heart mind, and how when we react to see how we feel is not something we are trained in. And to check how we're doing, how we feel, where we feel it is a new experience I've recently learned. That connects my head and heart and to the rest of my body. And by maybe it's in that moment when where you're checking how you're doing, where how you're reacting, how you're feeling, that once you've checked that, the door opens to receive what's coming with a generosity that's before didn't exist. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of those lessons our grandmother taught us. And then we get into just this instead of
the connection with our grandma. That's only the first one. I got 58 more to go.
I still think it would be valuable for us to look at the definition of compassion. Mm-hmm. I think we talked about, we use the word a lot, so I'd like to go back to maybe.
Its root is passion. Mm-hmm. Right?
Calm.
Or is it calm?
And in what language?
Whose tongue? He says, and this will be the ending if you don't mind, and it's kind of, it's what he's saying and how, you know, what Barbara and we've all, I think, said a little bit. And I'll finish with this. And then let's put our cushions out, and then we'll bow out, and we can continue our conversation at lunch. How's that? Compassion literally means embracing the suffering of others. To embrace the suffering of others is to be liberated and opened by that suffering to the point of finding love. But compassion is impossible if we can't learn to bear our own sufferings and difficulties, if our old habit of denying and running away continues to have its way with us. So the practice of mind training begins with the effort to turn toward difficulty rather than away from it. when we are no longer daunted by difficulties but are willing to engage and make use of them, we become truly resilient individuals.